Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 27th of August. And we continue talking about the Democratic National Convention next week. Of course, the Republican National Convention from St. Paul, Minnesota. And we'll have two guests with us this hour, in addition to, I'm sure, many phone calls from you. Joining us frequently on this program is Professor Lawrence Jacobs, Director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, and a professor of political science at the University of Minnesota. Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin will also join us today. She spoke before the Democratic National Convention last night and talked mostly about health care. We will talk to her about that. She was, of course, a Senator Clinton supporter, so we'll talk about all that's been surrounding Senator Clinton in that room last night, certainly, and also tonight. And we'll be welcoming your phone calls. If I'm sure there are many of you like me who have been watching and listening to hours and hours and hours of coverage of all of this. There may have been some speeches that you particularly were taken by and would like to talk about that and what you expect to hear tonight and what you heard last night from Senator Hillary Clinton. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. Just to remind you of the lineup this week and next, Monday through Thursday from 9 until 10, we are covering the Democratic National Convention live by airing Tom Ashbrook's On Point, who is in Denver, and then we'll be with you each day at 10 o'clock Monday through Thursday to talk about your response to what you've been hearing and seeing. Next week, it's the Republican National Convention, Monday through Thursday, same kind of format, another On Point special at 6 o'clock tonight, and then the National Public Radio will be giving us special programming starting at 7 tonight from Denver. So that's the story. All right, let's go. And our phone lines are already getting real busy. A lot of you watched and listened last night. Professor Lawrence Jacobs is with us now. Professor Jacobs, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, great to have you here. I thought I was reading a lot of commentary this morning in columns, et cetera. I want to start with Roger Simon's column in Politico, in which he was talking about Senator Clinton's speech last night and said this. Some 18 million people cast their votes for Clinton, but they did not do so in the expectation that there would be some kind of power-sharing arrangement. We are asked to believe that a significant number of Hillary supporters will vote for John McCain in November rather than vote for Obama. That's what some polls show. It's become a major media storyline, to which I say, hooey. Maybe that's the kind of thing you tell pollsters and reporters, but I do not think it's the kind of thing that happens in real life. Do you agree or disagree?
I think he's overstating the case. This is going to be a very close election. In some states, it's going to be squeaky close. And the issue is, at this point, there appear to be a group of voters who did cast a ballot for Hillary Clinton. We do not want to overstate this, but in a close election, that group, perhaps constituting about 10 or 15% of those who voted for Hillary Clinton during the primary, they need to be rallied. And so one of the two challenges the Democratic Party faces this week is to unify the party. They've got about a 10-point advantage over the Republican Party nationally in terms of party identification, which is a key predictor of elections. And right now, Barack Obama's tied. They've got to find a way to bring those Democrats into the fold, some of whom are supporters of Hillary Clinton. And that's what she was trying to do last night.
And did she do it? Was she good at doing that?
As much as a speech can do that, it was about the best brief you can imagine. And I think the key moment in the speech, there's number, and I think it was perhaps the best speech Hillary Clinton's given. But the key moment is, she said, did you vote for me, or did you vote for these group of invisible people? And that was a pretty clever way to kind of bring it back to, you know, what are the issues we care about, and how are we going to continue to campaign or promote those, and to separate that from the kind of deep personal, frustration I think a lot of Clinton supporters still have.
And what is it? What is the depth of the loyalty to her, Lawrence? Why are people thinking that maybe they would consider voting for McCain, or that they may not? They may work for some other Democrat, but not even vote for Obama. I guess I don't understand the depth of that.
Well, I think it's partly dreams deferred. I think for a lot of Clinton supporters, and I suspect particularly women, there's a sense of we have been waiting for so long for women to break through, and yet here's another example of a woman being stopped. And that, you know, I think she's a kind of a symbol for a lot of pent-up frustration for a segment of the American electorate. And I think she was, you know, I found quite cleverly trying to address that in a speech. Now, you know, there are a lot of other things going on, so a speech is certainly not a maybe the key element of this election, but it's the beginning of it.
Right. The other part of the scenario, though, of course, is that you've got an African-American man who is the nominee of the Democratic Party. People have been waiting a long time for that as well, right?
Yes, and, you know, the history here, and I suspect some of your callers might want to get into it, it's been a tangled history.
Right.
Kind of race and gender, and it's kind of gone back over time, and there's, you know, again, I think among some women who've kind of followed this history, a sense of, we keep, you know, we're the ones waiting. You know, I can confess, I've got conversations I've had in my own family where I've just tried to understand this issue. And it gets very emotional very quickly. And it's remarkable the depth of historical memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does get very emotional, doesn't it? What about, I know you wanted to talk about this as well. She, of course, is all over the McCain ads right now. Why are they working to really get her voters to vote for him? And is that going to go away after a while? Now that she gave her speech last night, will they continue to run those ads?
The strategy behind what McCain is doing is to encourage Democrats to defect from Barack Obama. And they see the Hillary supporters as, you know, one part of that. If John McCain goes into an election in which the Democrats or folks or voters who say that they affiliate with the Democratic Party line up behind the party at, you know, above 90%, John McCain will lose. He's got to keep that, you know, down 85 or percent or below range for him to have a chance. And so a lot of these ads that we're seeing McCain run, which is, it seems perverse almost.
Mm-hmm.
Is aimed at trying to encourage defections among Democrats. Now, with Hillary Clinton's speech last night, I think it's become increasingly hard.
Right.
And, you know, there is a lot of chatter in the talking class about what else she could have done. But I think people need to get real. This was a speech that had to be taken as credible within a convention center that included a lot of people who've devoted a very large portion of their life for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
She could not just come out and say, well, never mind, on everything
right.
I've said about Barack Obama. But she made the case, I think, again, as well as anyone can make it. Frankly, if Hillary Clinton had been as successful and effective a campaigner she's been over the last 4 months throughout her campaign, I think there's a good chance she would have not won the nomination.
Interesting.
Particularly in that middle period in January, when she lost about a dozen races by wide margins.
Yeah, I thought she was particularly effective last night. And some people have said maybe because she didn't have to talk as much about herself, that she's more comfortable in that role. But I thought she really, and it's pretty much a universal praise for the speech last night, that it was very well done. And that she may even have, as Maya Angelou was saying in the previous hour, that that line of no McCain will be a rallying cry. I could see that happening.
Yeah, and this is the second part of what the Democrats are doing this week. There's been a lot of, again, chatter about, well, they've got to prove Barack Obama's experience. Not so. There's always a contest in presidential elections over which question dominates. And the question, is Barack Obama ready? Does he have the experience? That's the question that favors the Republican Party, because it plays to the strength of John McCain. The question that Barack Obama and the Democrats are trying to put on the table is John McCain ready for change? Mm-hmm. And so the message that is really, I think, starting to come through pretty strongly was very evident last night in Hillary Clinton's speech. And I suspect will be evident in Bill Clinton's speech tonight and then in Barack Obama's, is the one of change. Mm-hmm. And there's no way McCain is a way to kind of hammer that home. If you feel that things are not better today, then you need to vote for change. And there are about 8 out of 10 Americans who are saying that they think the country's off in the wrong direction.
Let's talk a little bit about Teddy Kennedy. I was moved, and I have a history with the Kennedys. Certainly many of us do who lived through the 60s. And I just thought it took every ounce of, oh, my gosh, the effort it must have taken. But he wanted to be there so much. And then we read today that he was in the hospital 2 hours before that with kidney stones, which are incredibly painful. And yet he rose to the occasion. He was there. I thought it was quite a moment at the convention. And you point out that he wasn't really, a few years ago, he wasn't the shining light of the Democratic Party, the father figure. He was shunned somewhat. Why now? Why was he such a thrilling man to hear?
Well, I think partly it's Ted Kennedy himself.
Mm-hmm.
After what was a fairly bitter 1980 nomination battle with Jimmy Carter, and he lost, he began to focus his attention on the Senate. And by almost all accounts of people who follow the Senate's history, he's emerged as one of the great senators, at least in recent memory and maybe the century. And he works with Republicans. And the truth is, behind closed doors, Republicans will tell you that this guy is a pro and is very effective. So I think partly it's just a recognition of the new Ted Kennedy, or the ongoing Ted Kennedy legacy, as someone who cares about America and has worked hard for it. But the other part is the first thing we were talking about, the importance for Barack Obama unifying the Democratic Party. And Ted Kennedy, perhaps more than almost any Democrat today, including Bill Clinton, represents the core of the Democratic Party. Having him come into the hall and saying, we are a family, we've got to get together behind this campaign, is a very powerful unifying message.
Right. And add to that the fact that he's very sick, too.
Yeah.
It just really tugged at your heart.
Yeah, it was a powerful personal drama.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who saw the speech, you know, I think you could see this was a person really struggling with their health. We didn't
right.
know the details about the kidney stones, but he was clearly, you know, struggling.
Yeah. Let's take a couple phone calls. Laverne from Monroe. Hi, Laverne.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, Laverne.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
I voted for Hillary Clinton in the primary. I met her up in Monona Terrace in February when Tammy Baldwin was up there. I shook her hand, and she said she believed in taxing the hedge fund dealers because the working class shouldn't have to pay all the burden of the taxes. And Senator Obama has the same version of helping up the working class, and I think that's what we need. We don't need all the hedge fund dealers ducking their taxes and putting it all on the working class.
So who are you for now?
Obama.
Obama. All right. And what did you think of Hillary's speech last night, Laverne?
Fantastic. It's the best she ever gave.
Hmm. Yeah, a lot of people are saying that. Professor Jacobs?
Well, I think, you know, this theme that that Barack Obama's going to develop on Thursday, which is he, too, is for tax cuts, but he's for tax cuts on the middle class and those who are lower income groups, whereas the Republicans are going to want to play up kind of the tax cuts more generally that George Bush favored and the tax increases generally of that Barack Obama's involving, even though they disproportionately play out differently on the income groups. This is going to be a big theme in the coming election because the Republicans are just going to hammer Barack Obama on it. He's going to try to redefine it as he's really trying to protect those who are less well off. Again, it plays into how do you mobilize Democrats, and this is a big Democratic issue, and then how do you reach out to that 8 out of 10 who feel like the country's going the wrong direction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Thanks very much for the call, Laverne. Let's go next to Bill from Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I have a couple comments. One, I think that this is an election that should be a landslide for the Democrats. The fact that it's turning out to be fairly close scares the, you know, bejesus out of me. And the Democrats, I think, have a death wish in this convention. It's like they want to make this historical symbolic point about here's an African American about to be nominated for the presidency, but the Hillary supporters are determined that they're going to get their symbolic victory as well, and it's going to be, I think, the undoing of the Democrats in this election. And also, I'm very disappointed with Barack Obama's choice of Biden as a running mate, because he's the closest thing the Democrats have to a George Bush. You know, the silver foot in the mouth. You know, he has a tendency to. I mean, sometime this political fall, he's going to step in it, and he's going to gaff in a major way. I predict it, and I'm just, you know, I don't think it's just important that we have an African-American nominated for the presidency. I think it's important that he win. And I'd like to get the comments off the air.
Okay, thanks so much for the call.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Hillary Clinton spoke Tuesday night. It's early, you know, it's in the first half of the convention. And political parties in America are coalitions. There is not, you know, one view. And it's important and a regular part of conventions to bring together the different factions. The Republican Party has their challenges, bringing in social conservatives and economic conservatives who feel that they've been ignored and neglected over the last 8 years. So this is very endemic to political parties. Both of them are, frankly, struggling with it. We could see the Libertarian Bob Barr, for instance, doing real damage to McCain in some states because the economic conservatives, the more kind of Ronald Reagan, small government, low tax types, bolt. So that's a, you know, kind of a generic general problem. And then John McCain is a formidable candidate to run against. You know, those of us who follow politics have always expected this to be a fairly close race. And you bring in the McCain record and the team that he's put together, and you know, frankly, no Democrat should be surprised that the race is a toss-up at this point.
When is he announcing his vice presidential choice? It should be fairly soon, shouldn't it?
This is a very, very unusual situation.
Right.
Usually we see the vice presidential candidate rolled out between the first week in July and the first week in August. And the long Democratic primary, the somewhat shorter but still long Republican nomination battle, kind of threw the calendar off. So here's what the McCain people are thinking. Barack Obama is going to come out of Denver with some real momentum. The convention seems to be off to a pretty good start. He's going to have this big stadium.
Huge
rally, 79,000 people shouting and screaming. And he's going to become soaring out of Denver. So what they want to do is they want to basically, if you'll excuse the phrase, kneecap that momentum and just take the air out of his sails. And they're going to do that by announcing the Republican running mate on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of steal the thunder coming out of Denver.
Right. And your thought on who it might be? I'm seeing Romney all over the place. I don't know if it will be Romney or not, but he seems to be popping up a lot this week, doesn't he?
He does, and you know that could be a pretty good signal that's worth that.
Right.
Though no one knows, and sometimes the candidates take real pleasure in fooling us.
Sure. We're going to welcome phone calls, more of them in a moment. Actually, our lines are all filled right now, but there will be openings eventually. Joining us this part of the program is Professor Lawrence Jacobs. He's director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, professor of political science at the University of Minnesota. Later this hour, Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin will be our guest. She spoke before the Democratic National Convention last night, primarily on health care. so we'll address that topic and what she's seeing in Denver. Our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and we're talking about the Democratic Convention, last night's speeches, looking forward to tonight's. Next week, we will be doing this for the Republican National Convention from St. Paul, and welcoming your participation as well. Back to phone calls for Professor Lawrence Jacobs and Craig from Viroqua. Hi, Craig.
Hi. I thought Hillary's speech was okay. I liked it when, towards the end, when she made a reference to Harriet Tubman, and I think she did a pretty good job giving us a little brief history of women's struggles for freedom and representation and vote in America. But I don't know who the guy was. I was listening on radio who spoke before her.
The governor of Montana.
Yes. Now, there, I think he was far, far superior. I think that was, I liked him. I liked the rousing speech. I liked the things that he said. I liked the language that he used. I think the press has really missed it, focusing on, once again, like a lot during the campaign as well, who they consider to be the star,
mm-hmm.
Hillary. And, man, I really liked him. In fact, I thought, wow, you know, he sounds almost like a white Jesse Jackson.
He was very engaging. I thought so, too. Did you, Professor Jacobs?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's a great speaker, and that's why they put him there. He was the rah-rah guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Hillary Clinton had a different challenge, though, because she's speaking not only to the Democrats in the convention center, but also, at least for the Democrats' perspective, to the independent or swing voter. Those folks aren't necessarily turned on by the kind of, almost over-the-top sort of presentation. That plays really well with the Democratic loyalists, but with other voting groups, it can be a real turnoff.
Mm-hmm.
So she was trying to modulate both to build Democratic enthusiasm, but also to come off as very sensible and reasonable to voters who are just not sure yet what to do about this Democratic ticket.
Thanks so much for the call. The other speech that I want to pay a little attention to with you, because I thought she was so good, was Michelle Obama. She just seems so genuine, so at home. And for a woman who, from what I've read, has had concerns about entering the political life, you sure wouldn't know that when you heard her.
No, that was a remarkable speech. I agree. It really personalized her.
Mm-hmm.
There's been, of course, quite a bit of, I'd say, political attacks on her, various comments she's made, whether they were, accurate or not. She's become a kind of a political football. And what she did in that speech was to humanize herself. I'm a real person. I've had a real life, and here are my real life concerns. And, my concerns about my kids and my family, they're probably like your concerns.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very powerful presentation, and it probably helped to maybe alleviate some of the questions, particularly among, again, those swing voters. This is a very hard-headed season we're moving into, in which you divide the electorate up into voters for the other party that you have no chance of getting. Your voters, you have to make sure vote for you and turn out. And then that group, it's not a great large group, who are genuinely up in the air. And this is increasingly about the up-in-the-air group.
Mm-hmm. And it certainly doesn't hurt to have your darling little daughter say, what city are you in now, Daddy?
Yeah, no, again, this was part of the, putting a smiley face on the
right.
Obama family.
Exactly, yes. Ralph from Bayport. Hi, Ralph. Are you there, Ralph? Ralph's not there. Tom from Burlington. Hi, Tom.
As far as Miss Obama speaking at the convention, it's really a strange thing in our century where the wife has to get up and make a fantastic speech to get her husband elected, and she gave a wonderful speech, and the convention itself, in my estimation, was it's basically it's a statistically deadlocked convention between the liberals. There are no moderates. But Mrs. Clinton gave a wonderful speech. I thought it was a very good speech. But one of the problems in her presentation, she's always in these big halls with this big echoing voice, and her best way of presenting herself is really in a smaller venue where she can come off being softer. But it was a wonderful speech, and she really got up there, and regardless of how she felt, she showed real courage. But it made you look that, hey, we did nominate the wrong person here. I think some people got the feeling that, anyway, that's my feeling mm-hmm. of the situation.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Let's look ahead to Bill Clinton's speech tonight. Here is a guy who's been criticized for making comments about Barack Obama, comparing his run to Jesse Jackson's run, talking about this fairy tale campaign, et cetera. I'm wondering about his prominence, whether or not the Obama people had second thoughts about that, and if he will think about that, if he has a task to overcome tonight to make people believe that he really is behind this ticket.
Oh, I think absolutely so. And this is difficult. Bill Clinton was the one who brought the Democrats back into the White House. And for Democrats who are feeling pretty giddy about this election, they have a long losing streak. And they've just lost, you know, one election, the electoral vote, and the other one, the electoral vote and the popular vote. But if you just look back since Lyndon Johnson, it's been slim pickings. And so Bill Clinton has a lot of pride in the fact that he brought the Democrats in. He sees his administration as having made some fairly major accomplishments, which he doesn't think that the Obama campaign necessarily gave full credit to, for obvious political reasons. So tonight for him, I think what we're going to see is a full-throated endorsement of Barack Obama, but also a full-throated historical record on what his administration did by way of comparison to what's happened over the last 8 years. So he's going to try to both rehabilitate himself and throw his weight behind Barack Obama.
Hmm. And Biden is going to take on McCain?
Yes. This is one of those moments where it's called defining the opponent becomes very sharp. And the choice between continuing the last 8 years and change is going to be the main job for Joe Biden. For folks who liked the speech last night from Schweitzer, stay tuned. Joe Biden gives a great speech.
Let's go to Mike from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning.
Hello.
It would seem to me that, you know, the speeches are all fine and the conventions are fine, but the reality is that probably 95% of the electoral is not tuned in, you know. The people who are listening are the people who always listen.
95%, you're saying? Oh, it's got to be less than that, isn't it?
Well, all right, 90%. The people who are listening are the political fans. The race will probably be decided in the last week. It probably will be shaped by international events. And I take issue with something that your guest said, that, you know, the convention is off to a good start. How can you possibly say that? They've basically ceded the first 2 days of the conventions to the Clintons. And they're in a dead tie with McCain. I mean, to listen to you talk, Obama should be at 60% and McCain at 40% when it's actually not that at all. I'd like a chance for a rebuttal.
Well, I'm not sure if we have time for that, but Professor Jacobs, go ahead.
Well, you know, I think it's off to a good start in the sense that the concerns going in, which were very intense and palpable, that the convention might well be divided, I think Hillary Clinton went a long way to addressing that. Michelle Obama presented herself in a very humane way. And it's true that there's not necessarily as extensive viewership of the conventions as we used to see. But the news leaks out, and it's, you know, it's in the newspaper and it's on the headline news, particularly local news, which is widely watched. And so I think, you know, it kind of percolates down, and the general message of Hillary Clinton fully supports Obama, that's out there now. And I think that will, you know, that'll have some ripple effects. But, you know, I wouldn't overplay it. I guess I agree with that part, that, you know, the convention doesn't win you an election, but it's a very important pep rally for the home team.
And let's just follow up on his point of why it is that Obama, and you mentioned this earlier, Larry, why it is that Obama isn't farther ahead. He says this is their week. He really should be feeling some poll numbers going up as a result of this.
Well, you know, this is the Democrats are up against a very formidable candidate. John McCain has a remarkable story. He's been in government for a long time. The reason that some of the conservatives feel anxious about John McCain appeal pretty strongly to independent voters, where he's doing pretty well right now. And the truth is the country is fairly closely divided. When you start looking at the last elections, you'd have to have amnesia to think the Democrats are going to have a cakewalk. The truth is that there are a lot of folks out there who are Democrat or who are Democrats, but also Republican. And there is a kind of a track record here of appealing. And then you've got the issue of race, which is part of this campaign. And frankly, I don't think we fully understand how that's playing out yet.
I think you're right, and that's too bad. I think it's not. It's playing out positively and negatively, but but at this point in American history, the fact that it should play negatively at all is it makes me sad.
You know, the caveat I would put on that, and I agree with you, it's positive and negative. Democratic presidential candidates have generally not done well among white voters. And particularly so in the South, but also elsewhere. And if you look back, let's say take the state of Minnesota, which I've just been polling, so I'm a little closer to. John McCain is not doing quite as well as George Bush among white men. But if you kind of look back at the record of other Democrats among white men in Minnesota elections, they've generally done pretty well. So there's a there's kind of a history here that has to do with the party and the Democratic Party's support of civil rights in particular, but other issues that's put it at odds with white men. Then you bring in a black candidate. It's going to be a very interesting fall.
It sure is. It's been a very interesting 19 months, and I say that and I can't believe it's been 19 months and all the hours we've devoted to this in our lives, right? It's been extraordinary.
It has been, and I think this is it's a good thing. You look around the world, and differences over interests and values are often resolved with violence. This is a peaceful process, and it's one of the things that that Americans should be very proud of. And I think this election season has been one of the most remarkable we've seen.
Has it ever?
Participation just going through the roof, and we've seen the first woman. First African-American. We've seen John McCain come from nowhere to win the nomination. It's really been a historic campaign, I think.
We're going to pause for a moment. Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin will also be joining us sometime during the next 20 minutes here on the Ideas Network. We're responding to speeches from the Democratic National Convention last night and what we're anticipating tonight and also tomorrow night, which is the big finale. Next week, the Republican National Convention in St. Paul, and we'll be following the same format in terms of analyzing that and having On Point Live the first hour, so that's coming up next Monday. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050, or send an email. Our phones have been crowded. That's talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up tomorrow during this time period, we'll be speaking with E.J. Dionne, who will, of course, have a lot to say about politics. And let's go next to Michael from Shorewood. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. You know, your last comments couldn't have been a better segue to what I want to say, and that is this. I think basically, and I hate to say this, but I think a lot of people are very self-interested. And as a white male, as a white person, frankly, who's doing pretty good in this world, I listen to the stories of rags to riches of Michelle and of Obama, and I hear the story of disenfranchisement going to enfranchisement by women. And I'm afraid that threatens a lot of white males, and I think it's critically important. And I just wish, if I could help them write their speeches, that at some point in those speeches, they would say that Michelle would say, and this is not just a story about what can happen to a poor black woman from the south side of Chicago, and Hillary would say, this is not just something about women becoming empowered and enfranchised, but this is a story that can be true for all of you, including you disenfranchised white people out there, because I think we need to not alienate those people and not play into their fears that all of this empowerment that we're seeing among minorities and women is going to be a source of disempowerment for white people. And I think that's one of the fears that
interesting
hurts the
point.
Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Michael. That's a very interesting point, Larry.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the real challenges we were talking about earlier. How does the Democrats reach out, particularly to white working class voters? And the reach out has to be basically on economic issues. I suspect that Joe Biden will be hitting that theme very hard.
I think you're right. Thank you so much for being with us, and have fun in St. Paul, Minneapolis next week.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry. Professor Larry Jacobs, director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs. And he's also a professor of political science at the University of Minnesota. Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin is joining us now, and your phone calls will be welcome for her as we continue our political discussion. She spoke, perhaps you saw her last night, before the Democratic National Convention last night, mostly about health care, and said for the past 8 years we've had a president more concerned about the health of our insurance companies than the health of the American people. John McCain is more of the same. Health care, of course, of much concern to her and to Americans, and a big theme of this campaign. We will talk about that. And thank you, Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin, for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
It was fun to watch you last night.
Thank you. Yeah. It was a thrill to be invited to address the convention.
I would imagine. The theme of health care, certainly Senator Clinton made the comment last night about visiting someone with cancer who had Hillary's name on her head, and a lot of people have made reference. We've been talking about reforming this system in this country for so long. What makes you think that the Democrats are going to be better equipped to do that than the Republicans, Congresswoman Baldwin?
Well, first, if you look at the ideas that the candidates have put forward, the contrast couldn't be more stark. The McCain proposal is really just tweaking around the edges of the current system. There's no bold reforms. There's no strong efforts to address affordability and accessibility. Barack Obama's plan is covers every child, no questions asked, and then addresses the affordability and accessibility for adults in the United States so that we can achieve universal health care for every American during his term. What I would say in addition, though, to the plans that the candidates have put forward that's different from the last time we tried to have this debate, which was in the early 90s, is that we've learned from that debate. Why did that particular proposal fail? There's political elements to that. There's policy elements to that. But I think you have a new generation of candidate here in Barack Obama who says, I'm going to be pragmatic about moving this through, and his plan reflects that pragmatism.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that it's been addressed as much as it should be so far by speakers at the Democratic National Convention? And would you say that this is a number one or two issue among voters this fall?
Well, I think that peppered throughout the evening last night, I heard a number of folks discuss this as their exclusive subject, or in their address to the convention, among other issues that affect our economy. I think for voters right now, the immediacy of cost increases is what I'm hearing articulated, and I'm hearing, you know, the struggles to fill the gas tank, the struggles to afford the grocery bill, the home heating fuel costs that they're anticipating this winter, and their health care costs. And all of those things are putting stress on the family budgets at once. I don't think you can divorce health care from our other economic woes. And so while you might not hear as many people saying health care is the number one concern going into the fall election, what you will hear is these pocketbook issues are stressing us out, and healthcare is a big piece of that.
Mm-hmm. We have an email that's come in to you from David in Menominee about this very subject. When Congress convenes next January, Congresswoman Baldwin, can there be an actual bill near ready for hearings on comprehensive health care reform, or will you be starting from scratch?
There are numerous pieces of legislation that have been crafted over the years that unfortunately haven't moved because of the lack of a leader in the White House saying now is the time. So there's multiple policy options that have been vetted, that have been looked at, that have been discussed in the general public, but haven't moved because of the lack of central leadership. I think what will be different next term is if we elect Senator Obama, we will have that president calling on Congress, calling on the American people, now is the time. You will also have one element that I should note for David in terms of legislation ready to go, and that's that the president is going to want to offer his own plan to the Congress as a starting point for discussion. Obviously, the Congress is typically on things so complex, not usually willing to just pass it as is, but I think there will be the next president's fingerprints or influence on the legislation that goes through. So that's something we should keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to phone calls. Eileen is calling from Madison. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
And I'm so happy to hear Tammy Baldwin. Madison sure likes you, and you are one of the Democrats who has stayed true to your firm beliefs, and I've followed your career here, and I really appreciate it. My comment, however, is on Hillary's speech last night, and actually all it did was reinforce my support for her. I felt that early on the Democratic Party, although they won so beautifully the last election and took over a lot of control, have behaved like wimps, kind of, and not protested so much of the Bush administration. I think that McCain, when they say it's more of the same, would not be the same. I can't vote for McCain, but I can't vote for Obama either. I'm disappointed in the Democratic Party that they supported him so early on. He would have had a chance following a wonderful career with Hillary. Her speech last night it spoke again. She has such an in-depth understanding of everything that needs to be done, and especially this health care thing that you talk about, Tammy. So I'm going to have to vote my conscience. They say do that, and I'm going to have to do a write-in for Hillary. And I know the convention is trying to support unity, but my head and my heart are still in her corner. I still think she was the best candidate. And if you'd comment, I'll take it off the air.
Sure.
I appreciate taking my call.
Thanks, Eileen, for the call.
Well, I listened to Senator Clinton's speech last night and thought it was brilliant, thought that she made all the points I was just really anxious to hear her make. As most of your listeners know, I did back her in the primaries and in many respects because I had worked with her for so long on the issue of health care. And yet I also view her as a leader and listen to her message. And she is, as a leader, asking her followers to question whether they were in this for her or in this because they cared about the same issues as she did. And that is, for me, my conclusion, because I care about the same commitments, to me, there is no other choice than Senator Obama. He cares deeply about the American working family and about the future. And what I feel so hopeful about is not just having a candidate for the Democratic ticket who looks to sort of instant relief and the short-term fixes, which clearly do need to be addressed, but also looks to quality of life generation after generation and cares about issues like, how will we leave our planet in terms of environmental protection and climate change? How will we redeploy responsibly from Iraq and bring our servicemen and women back home? How will we address our fiscal challenges in the United States? How will we wean ourselves from dependence on foreign oil? And the list goes on. I really thought that her call to support and rally behind Obama was the strongest I'd heard her deliver that. I'd heard her deliver it on many, many occasions. But for me, I was inspired to follow her lead. I was a long time ago, and I am renewed after listening to her last night.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Barbara from Ellison Bay. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, and hi to Tammy. I'm so happy that she's where she is.
Oh, thank you.
I have a concern going back to the health care issue, and that's that I know there are various plans out there, but they all seem to have to do with insurers and keeping the insurance companies in as part of the game. And my understanding is that the insurance companies are raking in a huge amount of money in fees and so on, much higher than a well-planned universal plan would cost. And I'm concerned about cost controls and wondering whether anybody's thinking about that.
That's a great question, Barbara, and it really goes back to one of the points I was making earlier about having studied what went right and what went wrong in the 1993 and 94 effort to pass national health care. And I think that the plan back then was a sound one in many respects, but the stakeholders who, as Barbara notes, has so much power, clout, and money, was able to really scare the American public about the plan before them. And so what candidates who have offered, presidential candidates who have offered plans in more recent years have taken from that experience is you have to develop both public options and private options that are affordable in order to have something that's politically viable. Now, still the private sector gets really agitated about the fact that there's going to be public options for people to choose because they fear that they're going to be great successes and show that that there is problems in a for-profit medicine scheme. But that said, I think that you have to go forward these days if you're going to be politically pragmatic. Without dismantling our private sector healthcare system, but having some companion options that work side by side in partnership. In terms of cost savings across the board, there's a number of initiatives that Senator Obama has put forward, both as a senator and in his presidential campaign, that relate to health information technology, which, if fully deployed, would really help us eliminate duplicate tests, help provide decision-maker support so we aren't seeing mistakes and errors, and those sort of things will reduce costs. So it's a sort of dual effort. You know, in my my own core beliefs and values, I would have a single-payer system. I wish we had the votes in Congress today to pass that through. But as I note, I think that that's probably not something we could achieve today, but we can get to very close to universal health care in the short term and then finish the job up at a later point.
Thanks, Barbara, for the call. Briefly, an email before we have to end here, Congresswoman Baldwin, from Teresa from Viroqua. I have never seen such active interest among younger voters who haven't experienced conventions. They don't have the jadedness that comes with age. My kids, 28, 22, 18, and 17, there's a busy woman, are enthralled with the conventions, the speeches, and the history in the making. We must not underestimate the impact of this election on young people in this country.
Oh, Teresa is so right, and I think that's going to be something that on Election Day we're all going to take an assessment of this and say that young voters made an incredible difference in 2008. And that really goes back to one of the discussion points earlier of having a candidate who doesn't just look to tomorrow and next week and next month, but also is looking generationally forward of what sort of economy, what sort of American dream are we going to have in the future? What sort of planet are we leaving for future generations? And I think young people get that long-range vision and understand there are things that we have to do today to protect against the most devastating effects of global warming. There are things we have to do today to make sure that our grandchildren aren't paying off the debt and the interest on our war in Iraq and many other programs that that shouldn't be, and that we have to reinvest in our people's health and education to enliven the American dream again. And I think young people are really captured by a candidate with that vision.
Mm. Congresswoman Baldwin, thank you so much for being with us, continuing having a rip-roaring good time in Denver.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin joining us by phone from Denver, Colorado, where she addressed the Democratic National Convention last year. Tomorrow during this time period, E.J. Dionne will be with us to talk about the convention and the speeches that we'll be hearing tonight. And we'd like to thank Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and Rhonda Fanning for on-air production as well and for all of her hard work all the time, but particularly this week lining up all of these guests. A reminder that the Democratic National Convention is the scene of Tom Ashbrook's On Point. He is going to be there tomorrow as well from 9 to 10, and then we'll be joining you here in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, from 10 on. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network.